Blog Talk Radio.
Are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry we drifted apart? Does your memory stray to a bright summer day when I kissed you and called you sweetheart? Do the chairs in your parlor seem empty and bare? Do you gaze at your doorstep and picture me there? Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight?
I wonder if you're lonesome tonight. You know, someone said the world's a stage and each must play a part. Fate had me playing in love with you as my sweetheart. Act one was where we met. I loved you at first glance. You read your lines so cleverly and never missed a cue. Then came act two. You seemed to change, you acted strange, and why I've never known. Honey, you lied when you said you loved me. And I had no cause to doubt you. But I'd rather go on hearing your lies than to go on living without you. Now the stage is bare, and I'm standing there with emptiness all around. And if you won't come back to me, then they can bring the curtain down. Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight?
Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party Book. We're going to have a nice afternoon. The sun is out in New York, but it's a little chilly yet. Soon, though, everybody will be running around in short shorts. And that'll be nice. And the heating bills will stop coming. So, I was talking about Joe McCarthy a couple of days ago, and the conclusion that I came to from reading a book by somebody who admired him and wrote a very detailed book with a lot of facts in it. And so I wanted to pay a tribute to Joe McCarthy because he was the only guy that was fighting communism in the entire country, just about. There were a couple of others, but he was the one that took on both parties and the U.S. Army. And for that, he was assassinated by the communists. Yeah, it's assassination by ridicule. They mocked him, and the media destroyed him, as the media does all the time, working for Putin and Obama, little Putin. Yeah. And the Iranians call us a big Shaitan, a big Satan, and the Israel is the little Satan. And we have Putin and little Putin. All right, I'm going to give you a Joe McCarthy. Let me see if there's any headlines we can do real quick. Here's one. Poll says only one-third of voters approve of a liberal senator, Kay Hagan. You have to, you have to watch those women, those feminist women, you know, that are very mean. You know, they intimidate men and they scare us. Yes, when they bark. And their bark is just as bad as their bite. Yeah. I always check the manifest on the cruise line lists to make sure there are no mean women on there. I like to do things in a friendly fashion. Okay, so having said that, I'm going to give you 34 minutes of Joe McCarthy. I can't interrupt it because I can't continue on. I'd have to start all over again. So here we go.
And his last chapter is conclusion. Samson in the heathen temple. So finally they got him. How they did is fairly plain and instructive when the methods are considered. Why they did it is less apparent, as there were so many days involved and a melange of motives converging at the point of censure. That's what they did to McCarthy. They censored him. They put a zipper on his lip. To all appearances, then and later, a crushing defeat was inflicted on McCarthy when his colleagues voted to condemn him. And you look at the House and the Senate today, and you look at the parties, the two parties. The Democrat Party is really today the Communist Party. They have no God. They kicked them off the platform at the last convention. They vote to burn the flag. They're legalizing drugs, which is part of chemical warfare. They're now running mob tactics. They're Shylocking. They're running lottos. They're into gambling. And you could say they're into prostitution if you look at the congressmen that are taking lobby money. You don't think a guy with the $800 suit and Gucci shoes is going up to see congressmen because he wants to give him a pamphlet, do you? So that's the Communist Party today, the Democrat Party. And the Rhino Party is a kindred spirit to the Democrat Party. Actually, the Rhino Party is now the Democrat Party. And all that's left to fight the good fight are senior citizens. Yeah, the Tea Party people, who were considered a threat to mankind. Why they did it is less apparent, as there were so many days involved and a melange of motives converging at the point of censure. Least clear of all is what the whole thing meant when it was over. To all appearances, then and later, a crushing defeat was inflicted on McCarthy when his colleagues voted to condemn him. The defeat wasn't merely the 3-1 division in favor of the formal verdict, but the informal penalties that followed. For many in the political world and press corps, he became a non-person to be ignored and shunned, a ghost figure with no relation to the serious business of the Senate. Reporters who once hung on his every word now observed a tacit compact to treat him as if he were no longer there, which perhaps in other than a purely physical sense he wasn't. Even worse for McCarthy was what happened to his name, record, and reputation in the ensuing decades. He died on May the 2nd, 1957, just 30 months after the censure vote, and was taken back home to Appleton to be buried on a quiet hillside by the Fox River. He wasn't lining his pockets, that's for sure. He was only 48 when he died, an incredibly young age, even then, for one once physically so strong, albeit with his share of ailments. Many observers thought he drank himself to death. Others theorized foul play. Still others that the censure and the ostracism had robbed him of the will to live. Whatever the specific medical causes, it seemed likely that terrific bouts of unremitting struggle and incessant pressure had taken their toll for some time before this. For most of the 5 years that his doings transfixed the nation, McCarthy was locked in mortal combat with the most powerful forces in the land, including two presidents of the United States, vast bureaucratic empires, formidable adversaries in Congress, relentless leftward lobby groups, and a horde of press, TV, and radio critics who made him their daily target. That's like the Democrats did to Bush. Every night somebody died from Iraq or Afghanistan. You were fed his name, his rank, his town. Today, when an American dies in Afghanistan, all you hear is NATO troops died to be identified later and covered up right now. And that's how Obama and the Communist Party switched tactics to their advantage. Even more to the point, he had been put through the ringer of endless back-to-back investigations and repetitive charges that drained time and energy, sapped his strength, and blocked him from pursuing the mission to which he was devoted. Look right now what's happening in the press and the media. Tomorrow's the 1st of April. April Fools, we got a president. Everybody is focusing on Obama's shortcomings. They're pinpointing Obama for everything that's going wrong. And very quietly, they're raising up a Hillary Clinton to sainthood status. While everybody is focusing their hatred on Obama, but nobody is focusing the who can.
What I do, hit it?
And his last chapter is conclusion.
Oh, see, I got to start over.
Samson,
huh?
In the heathen temple. So finally they
sorry
got him.
About that.
How they did is fairly plain and instructive when the methods are considered. Why they did is less apparent, as there were so many days involved and a melange of motives converging at the point of censure. That's what they did to McCarthy. They censored him. They put a zipper on his lip. To all appearances, then and later, a crushing defeat was inflicted on McCarthy when his colleagues voted to condemn him. And you look at the House and the Senate today, and you look at the parties, the two parties. The Democrat Party is really today the Communist Party. They have no God. They kicked them off the platform at the last convention. They vote to burn the flag. They're legalizing drugs, which is part of chemical warfare. They're now running mob tactics. They're Shylocking. They're running lottos. They're into gambling. And you could say they're into prostitution if you look at the congressmen that are taking lobby money. You don't think a guy with the $800 suit and Gucci shoes is going up to see congressman because he wants to give him a pamphlet, do you? So that's the Communist Party today, the Democrat Party. And the Rhino Party is a kindred spirit to the Democrat Party. Actually, the Rhino Party is now the Democrat Party. And all that's left to fight the good fight are senior citizens. Yeah, the Tea Party people, who were considered a threat to mankind. Why they did it is less apparent, as there were so many days involved and a melange of motives converging at the point of censure. Least clear of all is what the whole thing meant when it was over. To all appearances, then and later, a crushing defeat was inflicted on McCarthy when his colleagues voted to condemn him. The defeat wasn't merely the 3-1 division in favor of the formal verdict, but the informal penalties that followed. For many in the political world and press corps, he became a non-person to be ignored and shunned, a ghost figure with no relation to the serious business of the Senate. Reporters who once hung on his every word now observed a tacit compact to treat him as if he were no longer there, which perhaps in other than a purely physical sense he wasn't. Even worse for McCarthy was what happened to his name, record, and reputation in the ensuing decades. He died on May the 2nd, 1957, just 30 months after the censure vote, and was taken back home to Appleton to be buried on a quiet hillside by the Fox River. He wasn't lining his pockets, that's for sure. He was only 48 when he died, an incredibly young age, even then for one, once physically so strong, albeit with his share of ailments. Many observers thought he drank himself to death, others theorized foul play, still others that the censure and the ostracism had robbed him of the will to live. Whatever the specific medical causes, it seemed likely that terrific bouts of unremitting struggle and incessant pressure had taken their toll for some time before this. For most of the 5 years that his doings transfixed the nation, McCarthy was locked in mortal combat with the most powerful forces in the land, including two presidents of the United States, vast bureaucratic empires, formidable adversaries in Congress, relentless leftward lobby groups, and a horde of press, TV, and radio critics who made him their daily target. That's like the Democrats did to Bush. Every night somebody died from Iraq or Afghanistan. You were fed his name, his rank, his town. Today, when an American dies in Afghanistan, all you hear is NATO troops died, to be identified later and covered up right now. And that's how Obama and the Communist Party switched tactics to their advantage. Even more to the point, he had been put through the ringer of endless back-to-back investigations and repetitive charges that drained time and energy, sapped his strength, and blocked him from pursuing the mission to which he was devoted. Look right now what's happening in the press and the media. Tomorrow's the 1st of April. April Fools, we got a president. Everybody is focusing on Obama's shortcomings. They're pinpointing Obama for everything that's going wrong. And very quietly, they're raising up a Hillary Clinton to sainthood status. While everybody is focusing their hatred on Obama, but nobody is focusing who cares how they died on Hillary. Hillary's getting a pass. She's being groomed for the czaress of the Soviet Americas. But she's not a communist. She's got too much money to be a communist. The and there's good money in government. The psychological stress resulting from all while he was being portrayed to the American public as a monster is hard to imagine. That it led him to drink, too many anecdotes allege, seem plausible indeed. So does the notion that the combined unbearable burden finally broke his health and killed him. I come from a family of Scotch-Irish, Irish born in Scotland and Irish born in Ireland. I'm first-generation American, and I can remember the elders sitting around the table, not to let a children hear, okay? But they would be talking about McCarthy and what was going on. And what I could gather at that time, my impression was that they thought McCarthy was finished and that he was brought down because he wasn't, his enemies were stronger. And they sort of resigned themselves to the fact that that's the way it is, you know. However, that may be his earthly death and a scattering of his staffers and records have put an end to whatever nucleus there was of pro-McCarthy information or expertise remaining after the censure was voted. Some, such as J.B. Matthews, still kept their files on cases. Some, like journalist Ralph D. Toledano and committee staffer Jim Giuliana, squirreled away remnants of McCarthy's. Some carried on the struggle in other venues, but there was no successor or political keeper of the flame. This government of ours is too big, and when it gets that big, they can do anything they want to anybody. And that's why you got to make it smaller. When they say there's 50 million government employees or 30 million government employees, no, that's enough people to vote a president into office. Nobody in particular beyond his widow who would try to salvage his name or some kind of honorable place in history for him. Indeed, as time went on, the trend was all the other way around. McCarthy was dead and gone, his reputation in ruins after the army hearings and the censure. Why bother trying to defend the indefensible? There were other things to do, other battles to be fought. No point in wasting time and resources on a cause so totally lost as that. And perhaps more compelling, no desire to link other causes to the name of one thus reviled and battered, and now in death past caring. For these reasons and some others, the field of McCarthy studies and related Cold War history was left mostly to his political foes, dominant in intellectual circles where when he lived, and virtually unchallenged in academic and media precincts since. With a handful of exceptions, what purport to be histories of the era or biographies of McCarthy have been written by his severest critics. This guy's a martyr. The views of his opponents are thus presented as the facts, while significant data to the contrary have been denied, distorted, and many cases suppressed entirely. It was precisely here, of course, that the total and eternal destruction of McCarthy, or what appears to be such, was accomplished. 5 decades of vilification. Each new version heaped on and compounding those that went before. Scores of books and essays, countless media recaps, driving home the message, spreading the villainous image to the widest possible of public. And over the same span of 50 years, little or nothing of countervailing import. As suggested in preceding pages, the cost of all this in terms of empirical truth and historical understanding have been great. We need only note that standard treatments of McCarthy and histories of the age that delve into these matters repeat in pertinent detail the spurious version of McCarthy's early cases invented by Tidings and his State Department allies. The State Department is as corrupt then as it was when it was overrun by communists in the 50s. I do not trust the State Department. I call them a mini-UN. The Wheeling 205, the ersatz radio affidavits, the innocuous Lee list, the four committees, all recycled in pat formulations with no hint as to the bogus nature of these factoids. This guy's got a good vocabulary. As has been shown, this tidings version of the matter is false in virtually every aspect, and were not conclusively so, is sharply contrary to the available record. Its falsehood is more egregious considering that deceptions used in putting it together, the backstage collusion with the State Department, vanishing documents, we have that today with Clinton, and the guy that went down to the library and stole the original. Now, you tell me what government agency only has an original. The original documents that would have maybe put Clinton in jail. And transcripts, the recordings tidings professed to have but didn't. Given all of which, we may well ask, why has the tidings version been accepted, embellished, and purveyed to readers as the factual treatment of McCarthy's early cases? Similar questions might be raised about other chapters in the story, naming the names, the Gillette Committee's concealments and evasions, the multi-layered cover-ups of Amerasia, and felonious clearing of John Service. Amerasia had to do with helping Mao Zedong come to power, and they were, I believe they were some sort of a government agency run by the State Department or sanctioned by the State Department. And a clear and well-known communist was this guy John Service, and he was in the State Department. The Anna Lee Morse charade, and so on in grim procession. One has to search long and hard in conventional histories to find discussions of these matters that make the essential facts of record clear to the average reader. That McCarthy made his share of errors, some contributing to his downfall, is true enough. A number of such have been noted in these pages. Errors of detail in the presentation of his cases, the Marshall speech, a huge error of judgment, and to some degree as well of fact, the unprovable espionage charge against Owen Lattimore, the emotional blow-up with Zicker, the use of a harsh invective against various foes, though no harsher than the invective used against him, and errors too of omission, failure to tell the Senate he was mining data from the Lee list and not reining in Roy Cohen when he was badgering the Army about Shine. It was his private Shine in the military who used to work with McCarthy and Cohen. And there's some allegation that Cohen and Shine had a relationship, and that Cohen tried to get him a soft job in the military when he got drafted. And but then again, then you have to wonder, why did this guy get drafted when all of a sudden it was his time? These and other McCarthy miscues were important, not only because, see, when you're clean, man, you got to stay clean. You got to do it all the way. You got to be honest. You got to let the truth chips fall where it may. You got to stick to the truth. And that's hard to do because you're dealing with crooks and liars. We're wrong and maladroit per se, but because in the usual case they gave hostages to his opponents, who repeatedly used them to deflect attention from questions of black security and loyalty risks on federal payrolls and make McCarthy himself the issue. He thus strengthened the hands of powerful foes who had more than enough political media muscle to begin with. It would be possible simply by stringing such episodes together to build an indictment of McCarthy, which, of course, the usual histories do. However, these treatments invariably tilt the verdict by omitting or glossing over the cases in which he was proved right. Amerasia. So if you want to know anything about Joe McCarthy, look up Amerasia. That seems to be one of his victories. The IPR, the debacle of State Department security practice, a long list of suspects from Gustavo Duran to Aaron Coleman and countless others. A true balance sheet would have to include all this and a good deal more of similar nature to be even remotely accurate in its conclusions. And of course, the legend can't be confined just to McCarthy, as if he were the only player in the drama. His record needs to be set over against that of his opponents, from Tidings and the State Department to Joe Welsh and Stevens Adams. On that kind of balance sheet, it's plain that McCarthy was far more sinned against than sinning, and that on the central issues he was chiefly right and his opponents chiefly in error. This was most obviously true in the early going against Tidings and the Gillette Committee, but would remain so in later battles also. Perhaps the easiest way of judging the matter is to note that McCarthy throughout was battling for public disclosure of the relevant data, while the typical stance of his adversaries was to suppress or obscure the facts on whatever pretext. Usually in such confrontations, it isn't difficult to figure out that the people trying to hold back information are the ones who will be embarrassed by it, and thus the people who want being truthful. Concealment of data by his foes was so consistent a feature of the McCarthy saga, it's hard to believe the writers who take the part of his opponents can't see it. And of course, it wasn't concealment. It's impossible to study the gross deceptions of the Tidings report. Apparently, the Tidings report is a bad report, huh? The bizarre testimony of Tidings about the supposed recording from Wheeling, or the clanking contradictions of Bob Stevens and John Adams about the genesis of their charges against McCarthy, without seeing the pattern of flagrant falsehood. The point is significant in itself, but becomes the more so when we consider the things that were being concealed or palpably misstated. Despite all of which, our histories and biographies across a span of decades has depicted Tidings, Stevens, Adams, et al. As the good guys, relatively speaking, and McCarthy as the villain. It's very hard. It's very hard to be a devious enemy. In trying to understand all the slanted history and why it continues, it's well to stress again that more is involved here than the doings of McCarthy. The real issue has always been the larger question of what actually happened to America and the world at the midpoint of the 20th century, what it meant, and who was responsible for it. The point of the standard treatments, as seen, isn't merely that McCarthy was mistaken, but that the perspective he represented itself was evil and needs everywhere to be combated. Nowhere is this more apparent than in a discussion of the China hands in the State Department. There have been countless books and essays through the years, not merely justifying, but glorifying, such as John Stewart Service, John Carter Vincent, John Patton Davies, and others at State for their alleged foresight on events in China. It is this view of the China issue and others like it that dictates the author's attitudes on McCarthy. He was wrong because the China hands were right, or so these volumes tell us. From this angle, once more, McCarthy was almost an incidental figure. The motivations to write the history this way would be the same even if McCarthy had never existed. On the other hand, McCarthy in his heyday became a very consequential figure indeed, precisely because he threatened this reading of America's till then feckless Asian policy and those complicit in it. His 1950 charges and the explosion of public protest that followed hit the Acheson State Department, its China hands, and their various outside allies with stunning force, thus upsetting the plans and interests of many influential people. Numerous histories and biographies written in the intervening decades have been attempts to repair this damage, to win on the battlefield of history the war for public opinion that was lost so badly in the 1950s. You've got to remember, Korea was right around the corner. And that, of course, is the other side of this story in deciding whether McCarthy was defeated or was in some sense the victor. It's true that ultimately they got him, but it's equally true before this happened, he got them, or at least a sizable number of them, in case after significant case, Service, Vincent, Lattimore, Jessup, Bronauer, O. Edmund Club, and scores of others, McCarthy's targets were driven from the field, and with them the Amerasia IPR agenda for more Far East capitulations. It's doubtful that any other American figure outside the confines of the White House had more impact on the course of Cold War history. Whether that impact was for good or ill, of course, depends on one's perspective. There were some other consequences also in what might be viewed as collateral McCarthy damage. The communist agent, Mary Jane Keeney, would finally lose her job at the United Nations. So yeah, these people also went on to the United Nations, which to me is a useless organization. While the Soviet henchman, Saul Adler, decided in May 1950 at the fever pitch of the McCarthy Führer that the time had come to quit the Treasury and leave the country. Lachlan Curie, though no longer holding a federal job, had been hanging around since 1945. He too departed in 1950. Perhaps it was mere coincidence that these two Soviet agents decided to skip precisely at this juncture, and perhaps it wasn't. Still other direct and indirect examples of McCarthy's impact might be cited. Most notably, the firming up of security measures by the Truman administration in the late 1951, switching from the unworkable reasonable grounds criterion to reasonable doubt, as recommended by Hiram Bingham, providing some realistic prospect of ousting egregious risks who lingered on the federal payroll. Such was the trend toward tougher McCarthy-driven security measures that developed in the early 50s, also known as the Reign of Terror. There are many instances of the McCarthy effect, but a couple relating to the Ike age and McCarthy's tenure as committee chairman are offered here by way of wrap-up. It is remarkable but generally neglected fact that every major McCarthy investigation in the period of 1953 to 1954 resulted in some significant change in governmental practice. The State Department files, the business about Baker West, books and overseas reading centers, the loyalty drill at GPO, the Pentagon security days suggested by Peres and Morse, and so on. In every instance, the officials in charge admitted there had been enormous foul-ups and moved to take a corrective action. I'm going to go back to the line that talked about the books in overseas reading centers. They were communist-type books. And now we have those books in the public school system. And there were also, as in the Truman era, just remember what that guy college professor said, and we dropped the two bombs at the end of World War II, like we didn't have to drop them, you know, we did it for fun. It's like Bruce Springsteen singing, "We went to Nam to kill the yellow man." And Bruce Springsteen has no idea what he's singing about, or maybe he does. But there were yellow men who lived in the south of Vietnam who longed to be free, and now they're in Louisiana in the shrimp boat business because their country is no more. They should go to a Bruce Springsteen concert. And there were also, as in the Truman era, some indirect consequences of McCarthy's hearings. As the executive sessions and backup committee records show, McCarthy's beginning in mid-1953 was on the trail of Robert Oppenheimer, big man in Los Alamos, a fact well known to Ike and his lieutenants. There isn't much doubt this helped force the hand of the administration, impelling it to move on Oppenheimer before McCarthy did so. Thus, Oppenheimer, too, could be added to the list of those who were in some fashion victims of McCarthy. As to the why of the fierce opposition to McCarthy and reasons for the censure vote, there were, as noted, different motives that came together to produce that outcome. The situation is clearest with respect to the Senate's liberal Democrats. And even with some of their conservative brethren, McCarthy was a thorn in the side of the Democrat Party.
Oh, God forbid.
God forbid you're a Ted Cruz. As the issues of infiltration and security laxness all had their genesis under Roosevelt and Truman. A lot of cooperation was given to the communists under Roosevelt because Stalin was an ally. And remember what Jimmy from Brooklyn says, when the communists win, they win, and when they lose, they win. The clamor, they come to the negotiating table with nothing, and they leave with half. And then they come back for more negotiations. The clamor McCarthy raised, you think John Kerry is going to be a match for that Soviet diplomat? They called John Kerry back. He had to turn his plane around. He had to pick up new instructions for Obama from Putin. The clamor McCarthy raised was extremely harmful to their party, which helps explain why under Truman every possible measure was taken to thwart McCarthy and obscure the truth about his cases. Harry Truman is my hero, and I hate to think that he would do that to guys whose names sound like McCarthy or MacArthur. Less understandable was the commitment of a Republican White House to cooperation in the censure. Oh, how I wish Patton had lived to run for the presidency. What a country we would have. Cooperation decisive to its success. Though there were obvious tensions all along, McCarthy, until late in the day, made it a point to say the problems he was addressing weren't the doing of the Ike administration. This became harder to maintain when it came to open warfare in the Army hearings. But even here, from the J.B. Matthews blow-up forward, the moves that escalated the battle into fratricidal mayhem came more from the administration side than from McCarthy. Add the fact that the Army hearings and the censure battle were disastrous for the Republican Party, heading into a tough election year that cost the control of Congress. Giving all the factors and even discounting for the destination of McCarthy by many Ike advisors, the White House drive to annihilate him is something of a puzzle. One answer appears to be that the president and some of those around him thought McCarthy was trying to take over the party and planned to challenge Ike himself in the 56 election. These apprehensions weren't at all realistic, and there's no evidence McCarthy seriously had such ambitions beyond the why not me syndrome familiar among politicians. He certainly had made no concrete plans to this effect that anyone was ever aware of. However, the Gallup poll in January of 1954 showed rather incredibly, considering everything that had been said about him for 4 years running, that 50% of the American electorate had a favorable opinion of McCarthy versus only 35% unfavorable. The Army hearings and censure battle would change those numbers in drastic fashion. That McCarthy was a flawed champion of the cause he served is not in doubt. And who among us isn't? How true. It would have been better had he been less impulsive, more nuanced, more subtle in his judgments. On the other hand, somebody more nuanced and refined wouldn't have dreamed of grappling with the forces deployed against him. Those forces were powerful, smart, and tough, and they played for keeps. Taking them on was the task, not for a Supreme Court justice, but for a warrior. McCarthy, to his dying breath, was that. Measured by a total record of his cases and political battles, McCarthy, whatever his faults, was a good man and true. Better and truer by far than the tag teams of cover-up artists and backstage plotters who connived unceasingly to destroy him. And that's what you got running the Democrat Party today. Tag teams of cover-up artists and backstage plotters. The truth he served, moreover, was of the greatest import. The exposure of people who meant to do us grievous harm, and of long-standing indifference toward this menace by many at high official levels. In doing so, he summoned the nation to a firm, willed resistance to the communist challenge, both abroad and on a home front. At the peak of his influence, the storm of protest he ignited shook a negligent ruling class to its foundations and scattered a host of furtive agents its lassitude had sheltered. In the end, he perished politically and otherwise in the rubble he pulled down around him. Yet when the final chapter in the conflict with Moscow is written, amid yet another pile of rubble, he was not without his triumph. Nice tribute. I'm going to read the last line again because I think we're about to witness this. In the end, he perished politically and otherwise in the rubble he pulled down around him. Yet, when the final chapter, in the conflict with Moscow is written or was written, amid another pile of rubble, he was not without his triumph. So he's saying he brought the wall down. He helped bring the wall down. But you know what? That wall may be down for a reason. It makes it easier for the enemy to come get us. They don't have to climb their own wall. They only have to climb our wall. Thank you, Joe McCarthy, for what you did. And I'm sure that by your actions, you saved lives. And that's what it's all about.
we're finished. Okay. I hope I didn't keep you hanging. We'll jump to a tune. Yeah, that's a nice tune. You got a drug habit?
Permit me to introduce myself. The name is Mr. Kick. I dwell in a dark dominion away down by the river Styx. The devil has sent me here because I'm full of wicked tricks. And I'm such a popular fellow among all you lunatics. I teach a course in ruination from the devil's text. To fools who can't withstand temptation, step right up, you're next. I hail from a hollow hellhole down along the river Styx. Allow me to introduce myself. The name is Mr. Kicks. When an old wolf starts prowling out among the young lambs howling, don't you know he's looking for kicks? When a young cat full of fly tricks spends his evenings chasing fly chicks, 10 to 1 he's looking for kicks. Kicks is always in demand, cause Kicks is full of fun and laughter. Lots of folks get out of hand because it's only Kicks they're after. Shady lady and her lover operating undercover. She knows sin and virtue don't mix. Her mama raised her prim and proper, but now while her pills couldn't stop her, when she's on a manhunt for Kicks. Kicks, yeah, yeah, looking for kicks, just kicks, nothing but kicks. I'm Satan's sinful servant sent to get you in a fix, so look me up just anytime. The name is Mr., name is Mr., name is Mr. Kicks.
That was Oscar Brown Jr., and we're switching to Sammy Davis, Jr.
When an irresistible force such as you meets an old immovable object like me, you can bet as sure as you live, something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta give. When an irrepressible smile such as yours warms an old implacable heart such as mine, don't say no because I insist. Somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna be killed. So on guard, who knows what the fates have in store from their vast, mysterious sky. I'll try hard, ignoring those lips I adore. But how long can anyone try? Fight, 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 fight it with all of our might. Chances are some heavenly star-spangled night you'll find out as sure as we live. Something
like that. Would you like to hear a prayer for peace in Arabic and Spanish?
Porque este mundo va mal
listening to this tune in November.
The party's over. It's time to call it a day. They've burst your pretty balloon and taken the mood away. It's time to wind up the masquerade. Just make your mind up. The piper must be paid. The party's over. The candles flicker and dim. You danced and dreamed through the night. It seemed to be right just being with him. Now you must wake up. All dreams must end. Take off your makeup. The party's over. It's all over, my friend. Party's over. It's time to call it a day. Now you must wake up. All dreams must end. Take off your makeup. Party's over, it's all over, my friend, it's all over.
The odds were against me.
answer to all the guys out there in a tight spot. And for the guys that we lost at Fort Hood, including the guy who lost his mind.
Can say so many lovely things.
Hey, we're back. Did you like that so far? Okay, we're uploading a whole bunch of stuff. Let's see if we can give you another tune while they're uploading. Oh, we're finished uploading. This one I'm going to cut short, but it has a nice intro, so we'll play it for you.
Thank you. birthday, baby.
Whatever happened to love in the USA? Whatever happened to true love in the USA? What went wrong? Did we elect the wrong people? Mr. President, is it true you've lost the entire Middle East and the Soviets are bringing back their satellite nations and you've completely disarmed the country and you got a health care plan that doctors are afraid to join? Mr. President, and you promised the insurance companies fat profits and the pharmaceutical companies fat profits, and you laid another layer of bureaucracy on the health care plan that was doing okay. Mr. President, have you lost the country? We're going broke. Every company you backed went belly up, and the only one that's left is GM, and it's recalling all its cars. Mr. President, what are you doing to us?
Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together. Brighter than a lucky penny when you're near. The rain goes, disappears, dear, and I feel so fine just to know that you are mine. My life is sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. That's how this refrain goes. So come on, join in, everybody. Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is sure to come your way when you're in love to stay. Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together. Brighter than a lucky penny when you're near. The rain goes, disappears, dear, and I feel so fine just to know that you are mine. My life is sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. That's how this refrain goes. So come on, join in, everybody. Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is sure to come your way.
Fantastic. A bartender, a champagne. Oh.
Do you love me? Do you want me? What can the verdict be? What is your verdict? What is my faith? What is your verdict? Don't make me wait. I've been on trial for a long time. What is your verdict? Please, please make up your mind. I can't deny that I love you so. The evidence prove it, I know. Please give me a sense of life with your charms. Imprison me, dear, in your arms. I know I love you, that I confess. What is your verdict? Is it no? Is it yes? Is it no?
12-year-old girl in school was saying a grace before meals, and the teacher had come over and told her not to say grace before meals. But she said, it's good to talk to God. And the teacher said, no, it isn't. So she went home and told her mommy, and they had to go back, and nobody would admit to intimidating the little girl. And that's what's going on in pubic schools, communist cucumber schools. So, as a defense to protect the people, we will play On the Way Out, Faith of Our Fathers.